Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
This show is a proud member of the On Us All Podcast Network. Why are we drawn to fantasy gaming? And how does experiencing world through video games impact how we receive the messages and themes of the medium? Well, guys, that's what we're talking about today in a new series. Really, we're not starting the series for real till like November or December. So this is like a teaser for an upcoming series of Gamer's Garage on Systematic Geekology. I am one of your hosts, Joshua Knoll, here with the pod almighty, your favorite co-host, the one and only TJ Tiberius Juan Blackwell. How's it going, TJ?
Good.
Yeah, and special guest, incredible guest, maybe, I hate to say it, Dr. Ord, but this might be the best guest we've ever had, Michael Morelli.
Wow. Wow.
Welcome to the show. Yeah, this is the first time you've been on Systematic Geekology, right?
I am so thrilled to be here. Yeah. Thank you.
It's gonna
be
great.
I'll just try and live up to the hype.
I forgot Tom was on to do Minority Report.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was crazy.
Well, then there's Trip Fuller. Trip's been on a few times. I feel like I've insulted a few people today, but it's fine. Yeah. Anything for Michael Morelli. Speaking of, for those who don't know, I forgot to do this part, so I'm going to need your help, Michael. You're a professor of smart things at a smart place. What is it?
I love that introduction, actually. I didn't want to add or subtract anything from that.
I'm like, this is one of my smart friends. That's, you know, like my brain is like, that's how it goes.
You know, I, not to demystify anything too much, but what I tell people about professors and people who have doctorates, at least in theology, because that's the discipline that I work in, is that we're very smart in a very particular, focused and narrow way and totally inept in others. So people are like, oh, you got a doctor, you must be smart. I'm like, yeah, in a very specialized way, but I also need Google Maps to get everywhere because I have zero spatial awareness. So, you know, if we got lost in the wilderness, I wouldn't be the type of person you'd want to be lost with. With that preface, I'm associate professor of theology and ethics at a school called Northwest College and Seminary in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Nice. Yeah, super funny. If you're on a plane, you know, is there a doctor on board? You stand up.
Not that
it's me.
I'm sorry. It's me.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, for this series, instead of what we're geeking out on, we are going to start off with what is something that each of us might have to decorate our gamer's garage, man cave, she shed, whatever gaming room you desire. What might you have to help decorate your space here? Honestly, I want a little interactive Mr. Zircon somewhere from like the Ratchet and Clank games. Sure. I just think it would be so funny. It'd be great. Yeah. DJ,
I'm not a decorations person. I mean, like I got pressured to put these hats on the wall. You know, that's the only thing on my wall is hats and a mirror and books.
Was that like mandatory flair for your podcasting?
It was just boring. I had this big like blank space here.
Right. So now you had to add a hat rack.
Had to have something.
Yeah, but you're not going to have like
I'm not a fashion over function person. Like if I'm going to put something up, I need it to do something.
Yeah, so you might have a Halo energy sword on the wall, but it's going to be functional that you can take off and use.
No, realistically, I would probably like hang all my controllers up on the wall. Like with a pegboard or something.
Yeah, that way you can like take them off and use them.
Yeah.
I like,
yeah,
like where we were both thinking or anything else. Joshua.
Yeah.
Like swords, throwing stars, nunchucks, all that sort of stuff in case there's, you know.
Well, I'm obviously there, have like a whole wall of keyblades. That's happening.
For me, right now, I've been rewatching a lot of my favorite sort of 90s films and 80s films. So it's fresh in my mind, but I'd have like movie posters of like the Goonies and E.T.
Nice.
Like all the good Spielberg stuff, Indiana Jones, just framed nicely, you know, not too much. Exactly. Just like that. Yeah. No, I've been watching those movies with my boys and they hold up. They hold up. That's yeah. True. So maybe some other stuff too. Maybe some superheroes or something like that. But definitely some good movie posters.
Yeah, heck yeah, dude. All right. With that then, guys, if you're listening, please consider rating and reviewing our show wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, doesn't matter. Those ratings help our algorithms think that we're important so other people will find the show. So do that for us, please. Also, want to thank our financial sponsors. Today we're shouting out Daniel Sigmund. Daniel, you rock, man. We really appreciate you. You guys want your own shout out, you can become an official member too on Systematic Ecology using our website that's in the show's description. You have a link for that same website. You can get extra free content, you can buy merch, you can leave a one-time financial gift, all kinds of stuff without becoming a member if that's not your gig, or become a member if it is your gig, you know. Speaking of shirts, we got up right now one of our favorites, the Throne of Geeks t-shirt, and on the back I like to shout it out for this series because you got like the Buster Sword from Final Fantasy VII. You got the Omni Wrench from Ratchet Clank. You got a Keyblade in there. You got an Energy Sword from Halo. Like, there's a lot of like video game references. Those aren't those weapons, but they look really similar. So, you know. Legally distinct, but similar.
Not so, violating any copyrights.
But I do think it's cool. If you like games, I think there's a lot of good references. There's even like a little potential Pokemon reference, maybe not quite, but maybe. So check it out. There will eventually be a playlist for all the Gamer Garage episodes in the show's link, but this is the first episode, so you won't have that for this one. Next time you will. And leave a comment somewhere, let us know what you thought about the first episode of Gamer's Garage, so we know what we want to tweak, change, do better, or do worse. If you're like, this episode was too good, let us know. We can make it worse. We'll have TJ on those episodes. He won't mind, probably.
Yeah.
If we just said, TJ, the show's too good, you gotta.
I can do it.
Only half an episode at a time.
I can make it happen.
Yeah. So, with that, though, we are gonna go ahead and jump into our main topic, which today, pretty interesting. We're gonna be talking about a genre of gaming. So, I think usually what we're gonna do, it's gonna be kind of like our all reading counts episodes, and we'll have our official members pick a game for us to discuss. But for this first episode kicking off, we're gonna talk about a genre of video games, the fantasy games. So kicking it off with that, before we get into anything else, what's y'all's history with gaming and fantasy games in particular? Y'all want to share anything, or like arcade games even?
So
if you have any experience with arcades.
My dad's kind of a gamer, like sort of a gamer. He was born in 1964, so keep that in mind as well. But when I was a little kid, we had a PlayStation 1. I didn't really get to play it a lot. The PlayStation 1 was very adult-oriented, I feel like. So I didn't get to play that much. But I had a Game Boy. I had the Spider-Man 3 for the Game Boy. It rocked. I remember that. Eventually got a DS with Pokemon Diamond. And then Platinum. And then Pokemon Black. No, Pokemon White. And then, I think actually between then, I got my first console. I was 7 or 8 years old. It was an Xbox, the original Xbox. It was the original Xbox, and it rocked.
Nice.
I was playing it all the time. There must have been some other reason that I wasn't playing the PlayStation 1, because the game I played the most on that Xbox was Turok Evolution, an extremely gory dinosaur killing game.
I remember that game.
Yeah. It rocks. They're remaking it.
Dinosaur Hunter.
This year. They're remaking it this year, next year. So I am looking forward to that. But
nice.
That's kind of what really kicked it off for me. Fantasy-wise, I played my first Final Fantasy game on the DS, the DSi, and it was the Final Fantasy IV remake, the pixel remaster is what they call it. Oh, it was It's been there. It's been on my top 10 ever since then.
So. Nice, nice. Yeah, I think myself, I don't know. We moved a lot when I was a kid, and my family are all from different states. Literally, I'm from Tennessee. My brother's from Florida. My mom's from Virginia. My dad's from Kentucky. Literally all from different states. So it was a lot of driving when I was a kid. So I remember like having a Game Boy. I remember being really excited when the Game Boy Color came out, and I was like, this is incredible. You know, I'm a little old now, I guess, but it's fine. So like the old Pokemon yeah. games I loved. I remember the computer games. I loved like the Disney ones, like the Hercules and Aladdin and all that. And I had my uncle would always come and he'd have to show me how to beat stuff. Like I would get stuck and be like, Uncle Chuck has to come. And like, I would bug my parents until we saw him because like, I couldn't get past this. I was like, I'm just going to wait till he does. And you know, I liked playing outside. So I just played outside till Chuck came and beat that level. And then I'd finish the game. You know, that's just how it worked. I remember Hercules was so hard for me. I don't know what it was that yeah. that original PC Hercules game, because it was like 2D, but I didn't realize there were some parts of that were 3D you can move back and forth on. And my little brain just did not comprehend no. that.
Especially yeah. like back in the day, back in your day, when gas was like $2 a gallon, it was super easy to convince Uncle Chuck to come over.
We got by on
that's crazy.
Horse, yeah. horse and buggy.
But yeah. I remember Rascal was one of my favorites on PS1. And then I remember playing Donkey Kong 64. I remember when the Xbox came out, I liked it okay. Halo was really easy for me at that point. And then my parents didn't let me play a lot of the games because they said bad words, and that's bad. So then I ended up getting a PS2, and that's when I got Ratchet and Clank and Kingdom Hearts, were the first games I feel like I remember caring about the story. Like up until then, it was, I want to hit buttons and, you know, smash things. But like Kingdom Hearts, Ratchet and Clank came around. I was like, Ratchet and Clank was just funny. So yeah, I'm not skipping those scenes. They're going to make me laugh. And then Kingdom Hearts was, I grew up in Florida. This is Disney meets Final Fantasy. And I'm like, yeah, here for it, man. And I think that's when I went from like kind of casual. I spent most of my time playing outside until Chuck came. And then I could play my games to probably about 50-50 outside in gaming when I was a kid until games got too expensive. And then I stopped playing for a while. Then I got a Steam Deck last year, and now I'm back in it. Back in it, baby. Nice. Michael, what about you, man?
Yeah, well, I think I'm a bit older than both of you. So I was born in 86. And I think the first fantasy game that I remember would be King's Quest 1 on the computer. And, you know, for the uninitiated, I mean, that goes way back. Like early 90s. So you know, move around with the keyboard arrows, and the actions would be type yeah. based. So this isn't as far back where it's all just like text based RPG,
which is fun.
Which is also fun. But you know, there are graphics, and back then they were amazing, right? Like, but it was all you type in the commands, and that actually. One of the games that I picked to talk about today actually is by the same developer, Sierra Software. So they created a lot of really cool early RPG fantasy games. But that sort of world was introduced to me in two ways. In terms of Nintendo, like, you know, console-based gaming, we had a family friend, and his name was Mr. Murray, Don Murray, and his wife Cecile. And he was just like the cool family friend. I mean, he was kind of an unofficial grandpa for me and my brothers, and he had a Nintendo. And he had games though, like Duck Hunt and Super Mario, and he's a big wrestling fan, so WWF, like the original NES WWF. We also had some neighbors in small town, Canadian town in northern BC that had game systems. And I remember one night playing Final Fantasy 1. And I say playing, but actually it was my middle brother who played, and I just watched and cheered him on, because I'm the youngest of three boys. So I did a lot of watching. But I think I first became a participant on Super Nintendo when we got Super Nintendo for Christmas. That was like, to this day, that was probably the best Christmas gift I've ever received. And I've received some great gifts, but I don't think I'll ever get back to that level of excitement and dopamine when we opened that Super Nintendo. So that was the console. But in terms of computers, actually, it was my dad. He was in public education for years. And so he always had the latest computer And he was the one who would always research games. And a lot of times it would be RPG games, fantasy games, strategy games. I think probably to find alternatives to the shooting and killing stuff, you know, it's like,
yeah, shooting is bad. Let's play Civilization 1.
Exactly. Yeah, actually. So no, I mean, you know, I've been playing Civilization since day one. And, you know, I think I got Civilization 2 as a birthday gift. And that was the gateway drug for Civilization. So
are you caught up on like the newest one?
You know what? I actually, you know, it's funny, generationally, I bought my 9-year-old Civilization, the latest one, for Christmas. Although it's weird. Good. It's such a, I haven't played it. I'm sure it is. But it's weird, like, at this stage of my life, I don't have a lot of time to game. It's one of those things where usually when it's like Christmas holidays or summer holidays, maybe I'll game a little bit. But, you know, by the time my kids are asleep, it's typically like, what do I have to clean? What do I have to buy? What do I have to sign up for? Mm-hmm. Or what show am I going to watch with my wife? I don't have a ton of time to game these days. But yeah, right now we have a lot of family Mario Kart tournaments and Smash Brothers. That's oh, and Rocket League. How can a game
insane.
Like can be so addictive? It's cars hitting a soccer ball, but like you get so locked in on that game.
The impressive part is that you can be so bad at it. And still have such a good time.
For sure. Like, my boys are way better than me. I'm just like, I'm the muscle. I just run into the other cars and explode them. Oh, and yeah. You get points for that. Demo, I can do that. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff, though. Good stuff. Yeah, I know finding time is hard. And then my system not working great was hard. So that's where, like, Steam Deck's probably my favorite gift I've ever received. Because, like, I didn't realize just the level of convenience and how much that makes it more likely that I game is like, wait a minute, you mean I can just be on break at work and pick up Final Fantasy VII. That makes it a lot more likely that I actually play it, turned out. Or like, I'm in bed, can't sleep. Let me just reach over. All right.
Let's go.
Yeah, it's great.
Hey guys, Christian here. Have you ever wondered how you can support Systematic Ecology? Well, we've made it a lot easier for you by going to Fourth Wall. Instead of what we've done in the past, Fourth Wall makes everything very easy for everyone involved. Everything is in the same spot. So if you want to find a way to become a member and get access to our exclusive memberships and all the giveaways that we're going to be doing, Fourth Wall is the way to go. As well, if you want to see all the extra episodes and content that we only put to our members, that's the best way to go. Feel free to rate and review us there. You can also leave a donation or tip if that's something you're interested in. And as well, you can help support our All Reading Counts initiative that we do. All the donations that go to that go to our libraries. You also, if you really want to, it's like, man, I really want to hear more episodes about Christian for some reason, or even for even reasons I don't understand. You want to hear Joshua more often. We have episodes listed by host, and you can see everyone there. If you have a favorite host, head that way and support the episodes that they're on. You also find a link to our YouTube page, and we may be adding some special content beyond what we've promised. Everything that was once in multiple different locations and you didn't know where to go, well, it's all in that one convenient place. If you want to know exactly where to go, the link to this will be in the description below.
But we want to talk about the Final Fantasy. We talk about fantasy genre in gaming. And I Googled what the top selling fantasy games of all time were. I'm gonna list them off here. What Google gave me, six or 10. Depends how you count. All the original Pokemon games, Red, Blue, Green, Yellow, Skyrim, Diablo 3, Final Fantasy 7, The Witcher 3, and then Final Fantasy 10/10-2.
Should not be grouped together, by the way. Completely different games.
Listen, I'm just telling you what Google's spat out at me, man. Look, as a whole, like, are we surprised by this picks? Have we have any connection to any of these? Or where
you don't have anything to say about these? I think it's really funny that Diablo 4 is not on there. Just because it's not as good as Diablo 3. Most Diablo fans I know still play Diablo 3. Skyrim, of course, no question. Of course, it's there. I think what it really speaks to is the scope of the fantasy genre. Mm-hmm. I mean, Skyrim and Pokemon.
What's just similar? So funny here? See those images next to each other.
What's similar between these two games? The Witcher and Pokemon.
Yeah,
The Witcher and Final Fantasy. Like, what are we
exactly?
It's there is so much range in the genre that it there's a reason that, you know, we call them high fantasy or science fantasy or classical fantasy.
Yeah, like it's a lot. Pokemon didn't even occur to me when we first said fantasy genre. Like, I mean, that definitely counts. It just my mind didn't go there.
Yeah, I mean, I can attest to the fact that we did have I think it was a group chat via text where we were all talking about choosing our favorite games. And then you dropped this into the chat. And we were like, does it count? And we're like, yeah, that just checks out. Like, what else would it be? But it kind of feels like a standalone, like a genre unto itself. But yeah, I don't think there are any massive surprises here. Like, Skyrim was a possible favorite on my list for sure. Mm-hmm. Diablo, when I saw that, I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But it wouldn't be my favorite necessarily because the amount of thought and story that goes into the Diablo games isn't at the level of the other favorites that I have. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fun. It's kind of like Doom, you know, the Doom series, at least the early ones. You're like, if you're playing that, it's not for story or getting, you know, emotionally attached to the characters.
It's great,
you're like,
though.
I want to kill something. Time. Yeah. It's fun. Like, I mean, yeah. So I never played Witcher. Mm-hmm. I did play Final Fantasy X and X2 and Final Fantasy VII. But yeah, no, I haven't played The Witcher.
Yeah, I haven't played Witcher. I started reading the books, though. But the, I think to me, Pokemon, Skyrim, Final Fantasy VII, I just assumed were going to be on there. Like, those are all just like staples in gaming community, I feel like. The other ones, I wasn't surprised by. I don't personally have interest in them. I probably play Final Fantasy X and X2 at some point, but like, I literally just started playing Final Fantasy VII like a few weeks ago because of this. Like, I already had it downloaded and just hadn't started it. It was on sale around Christmas time for like $4, so I was like, yeah, I'll get that. And then eventually I'll play the remake of Final Fantasy VII, and then now I am, and I'm like, dang, this story is incredible.
It really is. It's yeah, definitely it's in like my top 10 Final Fantasy games.
God, yeah, it's crazy. But I also added other Final Fantasy games, TJ. I have a lot of Final Fantasy games on my wish list on Steam. One thing that did surprise me is what wasn't there. There wasn't a single Zelda game in the top selling fantasy games of all time. And like, to me, even though they're not my favorite, when I think of like fantasy video games, Zelda's one of the first things I think of just because it's so popular. Were you guys surprised it wasn't included?
A little, but then you got to realize who we're comparing it to. It's called Final Fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? That's fair. Yeah. Like, I think compared to Final Fantasy, yeah, I think the reason none of them get above Skyrim or Pokemon, like, I think it honestly, it's just, there's just so many Zelda games. I think that's part of it, honestly.
Yeah. I was surprised, like, Breath of the Wild, Ocarina of Time, or Link to the Past. I mean, it's almost like you could track like an entire generation's, you know, developmental milestones according to, or maybe a certain segment of a generation. Like, but you know, it's, I guess maybe one way to think about it is like, just what constitutes popular? Like, what's the criteria in terms of, you know, most units of a game sold versus impact on popular consciousness and impact on game design and storytelling? How do you assess the criteria for the latter? I don't know, but, you know, like Link to the Past, a lot of people will say that that's one of the best RPG games, fantasy games of all time. Yeah. So,
yeah,
it's I think a lot of it actually has to do with the console availability of everything else on the list.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
For Breath of the Wild, you've got Wii U, which no one bought, and the Switch, which really popular. But at first, when Breath of the Wild came out, it still wasn't like in every home. Not everybody had a Switch at the time. Now I feel like most people kind of do. And it's hard for Nintendo to bridge that gap when they refuse to port their games to other companies' systems. The exception being Pokemon, because literally everyone had a Game Boy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Because it was like the only portable system at some point.
Yeah, that's why Tetris was like the highest selling video game of all time until 2022 and when GTA 5 passed it.
Which is just wild.
Tetris was number one. Now it's GTA 5.
That's such a hard pivot.
I agree. I think too, what's interesting, why people probably associate Zelda's popularity, it's a much more extreme version of, obviously I'm gonna talk about Kingdom Hearts, but it's like a much more extreme version of that, where like, I think the people who are fans of Zelda, similar to Kingdom Hearts, it's more than just a game. they're a lot more vocal about it. Like Skyrim fans love the Skyrim game, but they're, you don't see that many times people going around in Skyrim t-shirts or holding a Skyrim weapon. You'll see some people cosplay, like if you go to like Comic-Con and stuff, but like, it's not like, I just feel like Zelda and Kingdom Hearts fans are more vocal. There are definitely more Zelda fans than Kingdom Hearts, but like, they're so vocal that I feel like it feels extra popular. Cause if you like Zelda, you love Zelda. I think that's the thing.
It's true. You don't see a lot of people with Skyrim tattoos, but you wouldn't be surprised to see somebody with a Triforce tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. For sure. I've definitely seen more Triforces than like the dragon emblem from Skyrim, but I have seen that emblem from Skyrim a few times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not but the, I also the fans know a dude who has Infernape tattooed on his hand, the Pokemon.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, it rocks.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. Yeah. All right, so now we're going to go through our actual picks, and we're going to try and do this pretty quick. We're not going to talk about each game. We're just going to kind of like, we curated. This is almost like the recommendation section. We just kind of curated some picks. I didn't go with my favorites necessarily. Some of these are my favorites, but there's kind of like four games that popped in my head. The original Kingdom Hearts, you got Final Fantasy meets Disney, and a lot of questions about what it means to be who you are yourself. Fable 2. I love all the Fable series, but Fable 2 is when you kind of get guns, you get a pet dog. It's just awesome gameplay and a lot of like interactive, like my choices matter, not just to like what happens in the world, but also the story, what abilities I have, what weapons I'm able to use, that kind of stuff. So it's a lot of fun. Folklore, I feel like, is kind of one that probably not a lot of people remember. I had a lot of fun with it. It's kind of like, I got to dog on myself a little bit, but it's kind of like edgy hipster Pokemon. And you go into spirit realms and you're like capturing these spirits, and then you're able to use their powers to fight things later on. Like, yeah, very similar to Pokemon in that way, but a lot edgier. And it's also a murder mystery, so the story's just more fun for me. And then Trine 4. I love all the Trine series. It's just side scroller, but it's like 2.5D, like that Hercules thing I mentioned confused me earlier. But there's three main characters and it's like a puzzle game platformer. It's very fairy tale kind of fantasy, so it's fun in that way, but it's not like super deep. But the fourth one specifically, it just, the art really stands out in that game. The music's beautiful, the puzzles are complex. It's a good game and a lot cheaper than the other games that I usually list. Yeah, so those are my picks. Yeah. We'll talk more about the genre as a whole. It's just kind of like, if I had to curate four games for you guys to play in the fantasy realm, that'd probably be what I'd go with. Mm-hmm. Michael Morelli, You want to talk about the four you got here?
Yeah, for sure. So I always have a hard time picking favorite anything because my tastes are broad and deep. So I kind of grouped into two main areas. First would be fun, creative fantasy role-playing games, and then more serious creative fantasy role-playing games. So in terms of the fun ones, I mentioned the Sierra Games developer and Space Quest. I don't know if anybody listening will know Space Quest, but if you can get a chance to play it, I highly recommend it. It's similar gameplay to King's Quest, except it's sci-fi fantasy, and it features a main character named Roger Wilco, who's a janitor on a spaceship and inadvertently finds himself needing to save the universe against aliens who have a technology that they want to destroy. And I don't know what it was. It just invited me into that universe. And, you know, there's not like fighting. It's just problem solving and character interaction and bargaining and puzzles and that sort of stuff. And that's similar to Monkey Island, different kind of platform, a little bit further along. But this is part of Lucasfilm's games. And I think that I got it when, you know, there was always those deals back in the day. It's like, you buy this computer and you get a game. Well, this came with it. But it's like following an aspiring pirate named Guybrush Threepwood, again, who inadvertently finds himself thrown into this drama adventure with a villain pirate named LeChuck. And even the sword fighting in the game is just verbal jousting. So you have to have like insults and then replies to the insults, and if you can get them right, then you disarm your opponent. So this was a type of, I think it takes a lot of creativity to make a game engaging without just straight up fighting. That it's the comedy, it's the character, it's the story, it's the problem solving that sort of is the engine of the enjoyment. And both of these games pull that off in spades. So if you get a chance to play either of these, I mean, go for it. Then the second category would be more serious, you know, moody universe, building RPG fantasy, the original Fallout. I don't feel like this series needs much introduction. Although when I talk to people about Fallout, they'll typically mention Fallout 3 when it went to console being the first one that they played. But I grew up, you know, playing the original PC games where it's like bird's eye view, turn-based combat style. But what I love about this series is from the beginning, you are thrown into a world that felt real and layered. And the character development in terms of like how you build your character, how you upgrade your character, probably one of the best sort of skill, you know, character development designs I've ever seen. And then Final Fantasy III, I think the original, like in Japan, it's actually technically Final Fantasy VI. But this was like the North American release and for Super Nintendo. And again, story and universe and characters. To this day, like the feeling of attachment that I have to the characters in Final Fantasy III, it's very deep. And, it kind of, I think, represented a shift in Final Fantasy gaming where the universe was more kind of second industrial revolution, steampunk. So kind of like industrial technologies mixed with magic and medieval aesthetics. And so I think it really kind of pushed what people expect of Final Fantasy and showed what you could do with story and character development, even with pixelated graphics. Like, it really just probably my favorite of all time. It was really hard to pick, but these are my top four that give you a sense of how I roll.
Yeah. Monkey Island also rules for like some really cool technical reasons with the sound card.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
That rocks.
Yeah. All right. And then TJ, You curated two, just two.
Yeah.
You want to tell us about them?
Yeah. See the issue is that the original idea for this series was favorite Final Fantasy games, and it felt rude of me to expand beyond that.
Fair.
Because there are so many. I've played so many. But if you count Star Wars as science fantasy, then one of them is definitely Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2.
Yeah, I was surprised it took you this long to mention that. Yeah.
Also, Elden Ring. From Summoner's Lannis.
Yeah. I haven't played that, but I have a colleague who has played it, and he has spoken very highly of Elden Ring, and he came to work one day when he told me that he finally beat the end boss and how long it took him to do that, and we both celebrated for him.
Yeah. I was trying earlier with some buddies. It ain't easy, but for this, I do think it's really funny. If there are a lot of Final Fantasy fans listening to this, I'm really sorry. These are two of the least Final Fantasy games that you could get into until 16 came out, because Final Fantasy IV completely does away with the job system, which is what Final Fantasy kind of had built itself up on and around. And they issued that for characters, real characters that had their own personalities and extremely deep story beats. I love every party member in Final Fantasy IV. They're so special. Like I said, it was really my first one. But it's like the classic story of knight working for a secretly evil empire, redeems himself, complete change in his life, and they end up on the moon. Naturally, they end up on the moon because it is still Final Fantasy. And that's where they resolve the game's story. But I still don't know if I've played a game that can be as emotionally affecting as Final Fantasy IV to this day, just because of the heroic sacrifices that so many of your party members go through. It's like six of them. It's actually a little bit ridiculous. It becomes a little redundant, honestly. By the time you actually have made it to the moon, you're just expecting someone else to do it. You know, just around the corner. Like, oh, what's next? Rosa dies so that we can beat the final boss. Sure. but it was actually instrumental in shaping my taste for future Final Fantasy, like
sorry to jump in here. I know this is your moment, but I do want to jump in here because I feel like I was talking too much about the universe of Final Fantasy III and not the themes, but the theme of sacrifice is very pronounced in number three as well.
Moving on, Final Fantasy XIII too. This is the one that I'm really apologizing for. Most Final Fantasy game fans do not like this one or Final Fantasy XIII. So Josh, I'm not sure if you noticed, but you read the list of highest selling games of all time and you read 10 and 10-2. Mm-hmm. That was the first time they did it. A lot of people didn't like 10-2 because they took 10 and made it completely different and gave you a different party with different mechanics. So they got the critical reception from that and they did the same thing again. except they made a third one this time.
They're like Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you don't like this? Well, I'm going to do more of this. And that. And then that. And then that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. But to me, Final Fantasy XIII 2 was the first game that I played that was like a genuine spectacle beginning to end. The time hopping shenanigans, just something I love. They get super sci-fi. They're going to the future. They're going to the past. You're seeing, you know, a bunch of like really legendary Final Fantasy creatures. And the story that you play through in Final Fantasy 13, once again, ties heavily into that theme of sacrifice because the Falci and the Seath, the Falci are having to give their lives to save planets and to contain the magic that is going to destroy them. It's so good. It's so good. There's so much to say. My first playthrough of Final Fantasy 13 2 took me like 100 something hours. Because
what?
With the time travel shenanigans, I got lost a lot. And I think most people would get lost a lot because you can go back to the place you just came from, but 100 years in the future, unlocks different paths, changes things around, changes the enemies that are available. It's a riot to me. The rioting, sure, it can be a little contrived every once in a while. It's Final Fantasy. Mm-hmm. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
Hey, podcast fam. Want to stay even more connected with the show? We've got you covered. Check us out on Instagram and Blue Sky, where we're posting exclusive content and bonus videos and fun updates that you won't get anywhere else. From sneak previews of upcoming episodes to bonus content, our social accounts are the best way to keep the conversation going. Plus, it's a great spot for you to interact with other listeners and share your thoughts. We love hearing from you. When you follow us, it helps us grow and continue bringing you the content that you love. Whether it's a funny poll, a quick clip from today's episodes, or just random thoughts, you'll feel more plugged into everything we're doing. So go ahead and hit that follow button on Instagram and Blue Sky. It's one more way to be a part of the show and keep the good vibes flowing. Thanks for being a part of the family, and we can't wait to see you there.
All right. Well, we are already at time, but before we wrap up, I did want to like actually talk a little bit more about just the genre and what it means that like we experience story in gaming rather than just watching it or reading it, you know, something like that. And there's several different ways we could take this conversation. I'm probably gonna let Mike decide how we do that. But
before, that's a lot of pressure, man. Yeah.
First of all, like y'all both mentioned sacrifice is a big thing in some of the Final Fantasy games. And I think that's a really good, maybe a good starting point for this part of the conversation that I want to have is like experiencing sacrifice in a game is just so wildly different than watching or reading it. And like, I'm not saying it's not impactful. Like when you watch One Piece and you see some of those sacrifices, it is absolutely heart-wrenching. But man, when I'm playing Kingdom Hearts and Sora does that to himself, and then I have to walk through Hollow Bastion as a Heartless and hope that my friends show pity on me, even though I'm the same enemy that we've been killing the whole game, it does something to you, man. When you're like actively being the sacrifice, it does something. You know, like Fable, you see it again. You see it in all kinds of ones. In the Trine games, you know, I mentioned it's a three-party system with puzzles and platforming. When one of those characters are gone, the puzzles become impossible. So you really feel that loss a little bit different when one of the party members aren't there. So it's just, I think gaming really does change how you experience a story. So I think that's a really good place to start. Michael Morelli, where else do you want to take this part of this before we wrap up?
Oh, well, I mean, I think one of the pieces that I see in all the mentions that we made of favorite games and even the ones that we haven't and the genre as a whole is you go from being an observer in the story to a participant. And in that sense, you know, there's that classic saying that art imitates life. And in this sense, I think fantasy imitates life and the development. You start in one place and you go along in your journey and you are making decisions that affect you in the present moment, but they are also affecting you for your lifespan. And even the decisions you have to make when you develop as a character. Oh, am I going to upgrade in this way? Or I'm going to upgrade in that way. And I need to get this item. And do I sell these items to get that better item? And all these sorts of things. It's almost to me like an analogy for discipleship, you know, not to shoehorn theology into everything. But I think that's why the genre always appealed to me is I loved fantasy stories growing up. I loved sci-fi. And so to have a world where you actually can become a participant in those stories and part of the making of those stories through the decision you make, I mean, sign me up. Yeah. When those things happen, you're not experiencing them just as an observer, but you are now a participant in the story. So when you lose somebody or you experience that frustration, like you're in it, you've developed attachment.
Mm-hmm. Especially the way that Final Fantasy is able to do it, because when they're forcing your party members to sacrifice themselves, it's kind of like watching a part of you die.
Yeah.
And being helpless about it because, mm-hmm. you know, you're trapped in this closing room, you know, classic walls are closing in on you and, oh, there go my twin brother and sister magicians that have been with me for the past 15 hours and they turn themselves to stone to stop the walls and let the rest of you escape.
The other thing too is the mixture of like tragedy and comedy, which is, I think, is an honest account of life. I think all the games that we chose, like there's a real tragic adventure, you know, strain to them. But also, I think all the games you mentioned too, they don't take themselves too seriously. So it's this amazing blend and even melodrama, like just.
Oh yeah.
Like you said, like it's a bit contrived at points, you know? Weird at points, it's a bit comical at points. But isn't that life? Like even amidst the sacrifice, there's a little bit of goofiness and awkwardness and coming to terms with that, you know? Yeah. So I think there's also that piece as well.
There's an NPC in 13.2 named Hope, from the future, you know, like 1,000 years in the story's main timeline's nice. Future, who fights with a boomerang. And they talk about it.
Yeah. You know, but I bet you it was really great. Sweet boomerang.
It was sweet. And yeah. They have like swords and magic. And one of them is like, you're from the future and you fight with a boomerang? He's like, yep.
Yeah. I mean, and there's one character in Final Fantasy III named Maok. And you get him later in the game. But his whole specialty is dance moves. So he does little dances. And then, but it'll like rain down like elemental magic on people. So depending on what geographical region you're in, you'll learn the dance of that region if you're there long enough. But he's just like this little white little creature who looks so friendly. He does these cool little dances. And if he gets the dance right, it does the attack. But if he stumbles, mm-hmm. it's like, oh no, Mog fell again. You know, it's just like, it's a little bit campy, I guess is the word.
Yeah. One of my favorite things, I'm not getting too much in the jargon and all the stuff because then I'll have to explain things and that'll become too much. But one of some of the Kingdom Hearts games, there's these cute little like almost Pokemon creatures and stuff you can collect and like do stuff with. And you're like, oh, that's so cute. And at the end of one of the mobile games of hours and hours and hours of play, he's like, oh, by the way, all of those are the souls of children. And I'm like, all right, Kingdom Hearts. All right, dude. Right. Maybe chill. But yeah, so that was a whole thing. But I love that you mentioned like discipleship with it too, though, because like even just me playing Final Fantasy VII right now and I'm like looking at my own actions and just seeing how much I've changed. And I don't think it was ever unhealthy how I was playing games. But like when it was like Fable 2, my first time playing, I wanted all the bad stuff, like because I'm not that person who's just going to go rob people and like shoot random things and whatever. But I'm like, I need it allowed me to vent. But now I'm like Final Fantasy VII. I don't even have the desire. You know what I mean? Like here I am playing as a merc and I'm walking through and this little girl's like, will you help me find my cats? And I'm like, heck yeah, I'm going to help you find your cats.
Yeah, let's
go. It does something to me that I'm like, I actually wanted to help this girl find the cats, even though I probably could go be fighting bad guys or doing something a lot cooler than this right now.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like it gave me a moment of reflection on myself. So I like that. So I think discipleship's exactly right. Like, that's a lot of what's happening in some of these games. And I also, just side note, I think it's interesting that a lot of the games we picked kind of contrast magic and like steampunk technology in the same game. Like, I thought it was kind of interesting that we all kind of went that way. Because, like, there's a lot of Fable games, but Fable 2 is the one where it's like, which one are you going to do? And I think part of us wants to experience a world that's more magical than the one we live in. So having it where we're choosing the magic instead of there's only magic, I think probably allows us to experience it even deeper.
Yeah. And shout out Fable 2. There's not a lot of games that will let you buy every single building in the country and exorbitantly raise the rent to get rich.
God, it's great. The new Fable game that's coming out this year, they created a new technology where every single NPC has its own life. Like, they're not just going to be standing in one spot. Like, they'll go to their house. They'll be with their kids. They'll go work their job. They'll go to that spot you found them in the first time. And it's like, man, at any point, I could just completely interrupt people's lives and hire them and buy their homes and charge them. And I can't wait for that new Fable game. But that's getting a little off the rails. One thing we want to say, asking all these before we wrap up, though, we want to ask in all of the Gamer Garage episodes, would this work as a book, movie, TV show? Or does this only work as a game? And we talked about a lot of games, so it's kind of hard to do this question. Kingdom Hearts, I've heard rumors they're going to make an animated movie. Please don't. That will be awful. Fable, the whole thing is that you can choose your route. That doesn't work as a story. Please stop. I think the only one in mind, because like trying, it's like cute little fairy tale story. Like, it's a relaxing, like, same thing if you just read an old fairy tale. Like, I don't need that to be anything other than what it is. Folklore, I think, could be a good movie. If like Tim Burton or Mike Flanagan did that story, I think it'd be cool. But like, overall, I think they work as games. I think I'm happy as Michael mentioned, the Fallout show is one of the big exceptions.
Yeah.
The Pokemon show, actually, I'll say Pokemon anime is actually great.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, I mean, Fallout has turned out to be really good. I actually would love to see Space Quest done by somebody like James Gunn. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I think about it, Guardians of the Galaxy definitely has that kind of vibe where it's sci-fi, but it also doesn't take itself too seriously. So there's kind of a goofy punk rock and roll edge brought to the sci-fi genre. I don't know how Monkey Island would do. Reading up a bit on it in preparation for today, it did say actually that the game was inspired by the Pirates of the Caribbean ride in Disneyland and some other stuff. So I think it could. I mean, honestly, though, it'd be one of those things where even if they turned Monkey Island into a movie and the movie was trash, so many people would go see it and have such a blast because it's such a cult classic.
It'd be so Monkey Island if it was bad.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, there's actually no way you could mess it up. Final Fantasy 3. I don't know. I mean, I want to say no because it's one of those ones where you're like, no matter what you do, I don't know that it'll ever just reach. It would kind of, you know, even if they did their best possible job, I feel like it would be the equivalent of Watchmen.
Yeah.
You know, like the graphic novel Watchmen, and then Zack Snyder. People were like, you can never turn this into a movie, and Zack Snyder did, and you're like, yeah, no, he represented the graphic novel. But like, the payoff of that, I don't know if it would really work.
Yeah, I feel the same.
That's part of my thing with Kingdom Hearts 2 is like, even if they did it perfectly, they got all the like original Disney movie actors and everything. Like, I think part of the problem is it's impactful because it's a game about identity. And there's something about playing that I just don't think translates in any other medium. And I like the manga even, but I'm like, it just doesn't quite translate.
Yeah, I definitely feel like Final Fantasy IV could maybe be like a good limited run series. You know, live action. Probably not live action.
Live action, like, on the moon. Let's do it.
Like a high budget Amazon video production, that could be pretty good. Final Fantasy 13 right. 2? Absolutely not.
I think it all depends on, you know, this is one of the things that I've observed with the Amazon stuff is they've gone like high budget, say on the Lord of the Rings and whatever. But it does make you realize that actually fantasy is probably one of the hardest genres to act. Because if you're not a good actor, you're just a human in an elf costume.
Yeah,
well, and you can see that. In the Amazon Lord of the Rings series.
I love Rings of Power. but
I like it.
But there's some stuff, the choices they made, that anyway, that's another conversation. We'll get Nick on. We'll have that episode. I will say, to your point with fantasy too, though, is like, magic is a necessary component. Mm. And that's not something like you can interview people and be like, hello, do you have any magic in you? But like, dude, Ian McKellen showing up like full Gandalf and you're like, yeah, that's magic. That is what magic looks like. And like, even I hate to be that guy, but I'll go to Disney World. I love Disney World. I'll go, and like, I'm not even name dropping, but like, you'll go with some crew people who work there and you're like, these are people who really believe in Disney, and they're like exuberating like magic at you, and you're like, oh, this is a magical place. And then sometimes you'll go and you'll have some guy that's there for an internship who hates his life being there, and you're like, he doesn't get it. And like, it's like, I don't know, like, I hate to be that guy, but I'm like, part of me, low-key, maybe it's because I grew up Pentecostal, but like, I'm like, I think magic might be a real thing that some people just have and others don't.
No, you gotta feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a thing. Like, which makes it easier in books and games than movies. Oh.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You got me there. All right. So guys, let's go ahead and wrap this up. We're already over, but we're not gonna get too over because I believe in us. For this, we're going to be doing a special double bonus episode. We're going to do a lightning round of other fantasy games we could have picked, and we're going to talk about our favorite fantasy games that are already part of another IP. So like Lord of the Rings games, Harry Potter games, Star Wars games, that kind of stuff. So if you want a double bonus, go to the website, you'll get that. For now, you get to leave a recommendation specifically of a retro game. So any game before 2010, roughly, if someone had to go to replay. I'll start, give you guys a minute to think about it. I mentioned it earlier. I'm going to recommend, if you can find a copy of Rascal for PlayStation 1 and play it. I'm going to put it this way. IMDb gives it a 3.3 out of 10. I'm known for bad opinions, but I love this game. Just this little kid running around a dungeon with a bubble gun. It's awesome. I loved it. It was the first game I think I remember as a child going, I love this. So I'm recommending that. TJ, if you had to recommend a retro game for people to go try out, what are you giving them?
Any retro game? Doesn't have to be fantasy?
Yeah, just roughly before 2010.
Okay, cool. Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2.
Perfect. All right, Michael Morelli.
I did mention it earlier, and just because none of us actually mentioned in our favorites, I'm going to say Zelda Link to the Past. I've been replaying that with my eldest, and oh, it's so good. So good. The magical items alone are worth playing, like Hookshot, the hammer, the Pegasus shoes. Let's go.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely, dude. All right. With that, guys, find your way to get some retro games. Just get some gaming in you, and then rate and review our show wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. It helps us a lot. So we appreciate it. We also appreciate our financial supporter. Today, I'm shouting out Daniel Sigman. You rock, Daniel. If you guys want your own shout out, you can also become an official member like Daniel of Systematic Geekology on our website. The link is in the show's description. A lot of other links. Check it out. It's worth your time reading through those and clicking on some stuff. Same link to the website. You can get a free extra content there. You can buy some merch. You leave a one-time financial gift. Up on the screen right now, I have the Throne of Geeks t-shirt. I mentioned it earlier. I think it's great. Get that Buster sword. You can get the Keyblade Omni Wrench. A lot of cool gaming icons. Stuff that looks like gaming icons on the shirt that definitely, for legal purposes, aren't them. Check those out. Remember, eventually we'll have this whole playlist. So we want to know your comments, how we could do this better, what you would like to see included, left out, anything like that. In the future, we're going to be doing like one game at a time. So probably be easier on time. We did a whole genre in under an hour. So I'm proud of us personally.
I'm proud of us too. Proud of us.
I think we deserve an applause, but I don't have an applause button. So just imagine. Yeah, just imagine. With that, guys, thank you so much for listening. We hope you all do us one huge favor. And remember, we're all the chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
Hey guys, Christian here to talk about our YouTube page. That's where you can go find us at youtube.com/@systematicgeekology. We have exclusive stuff there, exclusive videos where you can just hear other topics that you'll never hear on the podcast proper. These include things like comic book catch up, where we're discussing the newest comics that we're reading, Friday Night Frights, where Joe Day and I explore a cryptozoological, paranormal, ufological, item of discussion. Has a lot of good fun there. I have a lot of great times with him. We have spontaneous YouTube shorts that we decide to do, a topic we wanted to discuss. They're in a very short form. We do them there as well. You can interact with us live as we're recording like a What's New episode or something like that. You have something you want to chime in? Well, how can you do it unless you head over to youtube.com/@systematicgeekology. All right, guys. See ya.
Hello, friends. This is Andy Walsh. Thanks for listening. If you're going to be a systematic geek about this podcast, you need to know that it's part of the Inado Podcast Network. Other shows in the network include the Whole Church Podcast, where Joshua Knoll and TJ Blackwell spent over 7 years now in pursuit of church unity through education and conversations with leaders across divisions. 7 years, that's a podcast that has lost some baby teeth. My Seminary Life with Brandon Knight, where he began discussing what he learned as a seminary student and is now learning with the listeners in a continuing lifelong education. The Bible After Hours with the Foul-Mouthed Preacher, where he critically examines the modern church through satire, then provides a more progressive reading of Scripture. And the Homily with Pastor Chill Will from Chapel Hill, where Will Rose's homilies are periodically updated and made available through the podcast, always reminding us that we are loved with a love deeper than words. Thanks again for listening, and remember, if you're going to geek, do it systematically.